नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Verse 49 and purport. By His divine grace, I see Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada. Sri Goswami said, O Brahmins, King Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion, were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity. Equity means equal to everyone, and without duplicity. Translation. Nakula and Sahadev. And also Satyaki, Arjuna, and the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, son of Devaki, and the ladies and others all unanimously agreed with the king. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing the culprit, who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose, for neither his nor his master's interest. The Chaturbhuj, the four-armed one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi, and others, saw the face of his dear Arjuna, and he began to speak, as if smiling. Sri Chaitanya Manavisnam, Shapitam Jena Bhutale, Dayam Upakarama Yadadati Swaparantikam, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda, Sri Adaita Girada, Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vindam, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So here we can see the influence of Draupadi, although she's a woman. But if she's speaking something proper, we can accept. She has intelligence of a boy, but a boy can be very intelligent. She's quoting Shastra, she's speaking from her realization, and therefore, Yudhisthira, Nakula, Sahadev, Arjuna, Krishna, they all agree with her. Yes, we better not kill this person. It won't be an exhibition of compassion. It'll seem as cruel to Kripi, that her Asatana's mother. So like this, the woman's influence is welcome. we don't think that the women should just become slaves or mum, they can't speak. No, they can speak. They should be given a chance to speak. But the decision is made by the man. Arjuna is going to make the decision after hearing from Lord Sri Krishna. And then he decides what to do finally, after hearing from everybody. So this is the system. the king has to decide. He has so many ministers, advisors, well-wishers, but he finally has to make the decision. This is the way the kingdom is run. Now, we've been discussing on this point, when you come to the Brahmin society, sometimes there is a council of Brahmins. Like when it was decided what to do with Venu, then it wasn't just one Brahmin, it was a group of Brahmins who discussed and considered what was the best way to deal with him. And generally the villages run like that. There's five people. So that also, that form of management, Brahminical management, can be accepted. It's not so, because there's no force involved. So there won't be any, generally there won't be any decision to kill somebody. Of course, the Brahmins made an exception with Venu. Where they decided to kill him directly. But generally, the Brahmins is a voluntary society, and they all decide something according to Shastra in a very cool-headed way, mode of goodness, and there should be consensus amongst them. And then they'll, just like the... Now we have this Shastric Advisory Commission, which deals with philosophical issues. Well, there's a group of them, and they try to come to consensus, they try to get everybody to agree. So this is the Brahminical management. It's not just autocratic, like the king. He has to make the final decision. So in our ISKCON, both things are there. there is some autocratic control in the hand of the temple president. But even that, Prabhupada said he should discuss with the others, the temple, the vice president, the secretary, who's ever, there can be a 3 or 4 men temple board. And then the decision can be reached. The main point is to do it. We should try to do what's right. And that means that we have to be cool-headed. The Shachi also, he can't just act passionately, just like Dhruva. He was killing the Yakshas to revenge his brother. He was acting very passionately, and then he was carried away by that passion. This is the nature of passion. It carries us. It doesn't give us a chance to become deeply thoughtful and to try to ascertain what is really the best thing. So we should be cautious of the motive passion. And those in the motive passion, they should agree to be guided by the Brahmins, by those who are more in the mode of goodness. Then their motive passion is welcome. But if they act motive passion independently, just taking their own counsel, which is also passionate, then there can be so much problems. Because it is clearly said in the Bhagavad Gita, motive passion leads to misery. It doesn't bring us to the point of happiness. We want to be happy. Motive goodness can bring us to the point of being happy. Because ultimately we want to transcend. But that also can only be done from the motive goodness. Therefore, the whole system of bhakti yoga is to gradually bring us from ignorance up to goodness. So generally, we all have some different influence. Everybody, not generally, but that's the rule, especially in Kali Yuga. There's always some different influence. Someone has some passion, some ignorance, some goodness, and sometimes the passion is more prominent, sometimes the goodness is more prominent, sometimes the ignorance is more prominent. So like this, there's competition between the different modes. So we should be, if we follow this bhakti yoga process, then gradually the passion and ignorance will be reduced. That's a fact. Almost to nil, Bhagavatam says. But then, when we're in pure goodness, we'll be happy. And in that happy state, we can be open to the descending process, to the inspiration, revelation coming from above. And then we can be fully engaged in the service of the Lord. The spiritual master's words will sit in our heart. We'll be able to act on them. But if we're in the mode of passion, even the good instruction is there, we won't take it. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. As a child, he was insulted by his stepmother, and his father refused to let him sit on his lap. Then he was agitated, went to the forest. Narada Muni came, tried to give him good advice, but he wasn't interested because he was just in the mode of passion, fully in the mode of passion. So he couldn't hear the good advice. He had to undergo, first of all, austerity, purification, before he could accept the higher. So he did that. He underwent very severe austerity for attaining the Lord. This is called sadhana bhakti. He practiced, of course, in that age it was a different practice, but that's also what we're trying to do. We're trying to practice the sadhana bhakti with some austerity. There's austerity involved. Who can deny? Actually, there's austerity at every step, but it's not severe austerity. But still, we shouldn't minimize. We shouldn't try to avoid that austerity. We have to get up in the morning. We have to follow instructions. There's so many austerities are there. No illicit sex, no intoxication. We can't just act whimsically. But by following this austerity, then we'll gradually come to the mode of goodness. Then we can be happy. Everybody wants to be happy. And then we can also engage in the transcendental activity. Then we can be ecstatic, not only happy, but ecstatic. Because gradually, we'll be drawn into the spiritual affairs. But unless we are getting a higher taste, if we're still attracted to the material affairs, we get drawn into them. And then how can we expect to get drawn into the spiritual affairs? The spiritual affairs are going on. Krishna's dancing with the gopis. We can enter into that. Srila Prabhupada's engaged in his preaching mission. We can enter into that. Somehow we can be engaged in the spiritual activity, but first we have to be free from the material activity. We have to give up this tendency to mix up with the material energy, especially sex life. Very prominent here in the material world. So, we are practicing brahmachari, sannyas, to get us out of this this duality of male-female. And we can succeed. Just like we were reading in the morning. This is a very powerful process, this chanting Hare Krishna, for purifying the mind, for better than the pranayama, better than any kind of yoga system, which is also aimed to control the mind. The chanting Hare Krishna is the most powerful method to control the mind. And once the mind is controlled, the mind becomes our friend, then we can be happy in any condition. still, because we're preaching, we are looking to go where we can do the most good. In other words, we can be happy. I could stay the rest of my life in this house. You know, get into the schedule, chanting more, and so on and so on. But still, there's a feeling that, well, I should be repaying the debt that my spiritual master gave. He came out, he took trouble to come to a big city like New York, hellish city, mode of passion. He had to live there without much result for 1 year. Why he took so much trouble? Because, on the order of his spiritual master, he wanted to go to where the people were, to preach. He was living in Vrindavan. Why did he came to such a hellish city? So in the same way, we should feel that that's not a bad desire, that we want to go where there'll be more people to hear our message. Like this morning, we could have 30 or 40 people here instead of one. Then we'd be more enlightened. We'd be more inspired. And Krishna would, draw out from us more service. So that kind of desire is welcome. We want the desire to increase the preaching mission. Broadcast the message more widely. Bring more people to be into Krishna's family. So those desires are welcome. But desires to enjoy this material world or take pleasure out of seeing others suffer in the material world, this is the other side of the its attraction and repulsion of material life, or sadistic and masochistic. We take pleasure out of seeing others suffer, or we take pleasure out of suffering ourselves in some perverse way, lying in the bed, not getting up. It's like a masochist. And sadistic, we enjoy seeing others in trouble. So this is material duality. We want to come to the spiritual variety where there's increased exchange between the Lord and us, between the spiritual master and us. And that depends on our qualification. The spiritual master is ready to reciprocate more, but first of all, we have to be qualified. We give the example of the bug on the lap of the king. It's also associating with the king, but it doesn't share in his consciousness because it's disqualified because of its tiny brain and so on. So similarly, if we're caught up in ignorance and passion, then we won't be able to properly associate with the spiritual master, even if we're sitting with him. So therefore, we take this process seriously to qualify ourselves, to rid ourselves of the ignorance and passion, to come to the point of pure goodness, sudha-sattva. Then we'll have the association of the spiritual master and Krishna. They'll be able to direct us from that pure stage. At every moment, Prabhupada said, I was always feeling the presence of my spiritual master. Even I was in New York, hellish city. Okay, any questions? Nice philosophy, huh?